gonna like you.
I got enough friends.
Yippee-ki-yay, melon farmers. Welcome to Revenge of the 90s, Winter Wonderland series. We are marching along here, baby. We are talking about 1990s Die Hard 2, Die Harder, bitch. I think that was in the title.
It was,
if it's not, it should be. God damn it. Yes, I love this movie. We were just talking about this before we started recording. I'm Steve. He is Fabs. You know that by now. We're all amped up for this episode. We were talking about how this was like, we love obviously doing every one of these episodes, but there's something about this movie that is just like, gets you amped up. And I don't know if it's because it's like Bruce Willis, because it's Die Hard, but like, man, you forget how just goddamn fun this movie is.
Yeah, no, this
is like the forgotten Die Hard.
I never got that. I never understood it because I always just, growing up, it was like Die Hard, obviously, is number one. Then Die Hard with a Vengeance. And then for the longest time, I didn't realize there was even a Die Hard 2. And then I watched it like 15 years ago and I was like, what are people, like, what am I missing? This movie is awesome.
Right.
This movie has so many. Yeah, this movie is so fucking fun. It has, it has like all of the intensity. Like it does so much stuff right that they obviously became like, was the mark of the first Die Hard movie, which was like incredible. Sorry, my phone is literally blowing up. We just had a guest on about Anastasia, and she's trying. Her texts are hilarious, Steve. So you have to check this out while I'm talking. It's incredible. But we did the, oh my God, what's Sudden Death? We did Sudden Death. And yeah. I love Sudden Death because Sudden Death reminds me of this movie. Also, yeah. Like Under Siege does, where it's the, like, I love the confined time span. Like, I like everything happening over the course of a few hours. I like being stuck in a location. Those are like the marks of like really great classic action movies to me. And I mean, this is, I'm going to make the argument in a bit that this is like peak John McClane in terms of him being able to like be competitive against villains for a few reasons. Mm-hmm. But there was something about like when I started this movie to prepare for the episode, and I know I'm going to feel the same way when we eventually do Speed, when we eventually do Jurassic Park, where it's like, this is a definitively great 90s movie. And it was like it's a big name 90s movie. And so like, it wasn't one of those really obscure ones where I'm like, oh, Steve, you've never seen The Shadow? Well, you're about to go on a ride, my friend. We were just both so jacked for this and I can't wait to talk about it.
And it's just it's like pure ridiculous excellence. And I think when I was watching this, what I think I've discovered what I like most about Die Hard and why it works and why like the last one, A Good Day to Die Hard, is so fucking terrible is that, and it's been a while since I've seen With a Vengeance, and maybe it starts to go this route a little bit where it gets a little too fantastical. I can't really remember, but at the very least,
that movie is still great. That movie, you'll love it. It's like when we do the rewatch,
I can't wait.
It holds up. It holds up.
I can't wait. But what I really love about, obviously, the original and then this one, because this one is, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's like the first one. Like they literally have him say at one point, I can't believe this. Another basement, another elevator. How can the same shit happen to the same guy twice? And he's like just saying it to himself. And so like, it's very like wink, wink, like we just made the same goddamn movie. And also it's going to be just as good. But what I think is so great about John McClane as a character, until he becomes like a superhuman, is he is just such a regular guy. Bruce Willis plays him as such a regular guy who's always like, motherfucker, like saying that to himself of like, why do I have to do this shit? And
yep.
And he, whenever he gets into like a physical altercation and like he's like fighting hand to hand with one of the henchmen, he's always getting his ass kicked. or when he's like firing his gun, he's always like, whoa, like he's always like, he's not always like seemingly in control of what the hell's going on. He always comes off like he is a normal guy that's just being like thrust into this insane situation. And I think honestly, that's what I love most about action movies when they nail that. Like you were talking about Speed, like that's got that element of it in there where it's normal people being thrown into a massively foreign situation with like big action set pieces. And I just like, or like Pineapple Express is one that I always come back to as like a modern class action classic like that.
Yeah.
I am such a sucker for regular people being forced to do action things, and Die Hard 1 and 2, probably 3 too, any, all of them except for the fifth one, are just like the pinnacle of that. I love the John McClane character. Bruce Willis brings such like a fun, like weird, like, why me type of attitude, but then also he's so kick-ass, so competent, and like this movie works as a sequel because they didn't go well. We have to make it more accessible, so make it PG-13. They were like, no, we're gonna keep doing a rated R, and it's gonna be bloody as shit, and he's gonna call everybody a fucker, and it's gonna be like it's got all the beats you like. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if it's not that like Die Hard 2's ever been a joke. It's just that like people don't really give it the credit that it's due. People always talk about Die Hard, and it's like, well, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? You know, all that kind of stuff. And like, I know it's a classic, and Alan Rickman has a lot to do with it.
Yeah,
being as good as it is for sure. But like, damn, dude, if you've never seen Die Hard 2, you are not ready for what you're about to see.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing they do so right with the original three Diehards is like the sense of urgency. Just from the get-go in all three films is like, in the third one, they have to find this school where the bomb has been placed. And this one, they have to stop the bad guys because they've literally taken over radio control of a radio tower at an airport. And they're just going to, like, the planes are just circling it, and they're going to run out of fuel. And then the first one, he has to protect his wife from being killed at the Christmas party. So they have a tremendous sense of urgency where, while John McClane is like the regular dude, I mean, he's a cop, but like he's a regular dude, even though he's like reluctantly thrust into the hero role, but he still does it because it's the right thing to do. And in this movie, more so, he makes a conscious choice, because in the first one, you know, he's just chilling in his wife's office and there's gunfire. And so naturally he's like, oh, I need to like get to the bottom of this. And this one, he sees like three suspicious looking guys at the airport.
Right.
He thinks he sees a gun or like some strange device. And then he follows them. Like he could just be like, oh, fuck it. Like, I don't need to do this. I'm just going to get my wife, get out of here, beat traffic. And instead he chooses to investigate. He chooses to ensure that there's safety. And so that's what's also cool is like, he is this like reluctant hero, but he also still like represents good, but he's like super accessible because of how much he swears. And like you said, that's like a great point. He gets his ass kicked in like almost every fight, but he has this like frantic ability to improvise. And that's his like superpower. He's like the best improvised fighter ever, where he uses he uses hairspray at one point from like someone's suitcase. He'll use whatever he can to win. He doesn't win pretty. It's not like John Wick fighting. That's not the point of this movie. This movie just, if you've never seen it, stop the podcast. Like, seriously, stop it right now. Go watch it. It's on HBO Max. Then come back and listen to the rest of the episode. Then watch the third one because it's so good.
Yeah. He actually also reminds me as a character a bit of Indiana Jones, where whenever Indiana Jones gets, part of the reason I love him so much is that when he gets himself into these like big, you know, physical situations where he's like on a truck or, you know, he's fighting a Nazi in an airfield or something, a big giant dude who's like beating the hell out of him. I love, as an audience member, you connect more with the character who's getting his ass beat because it's more relatable to be like, I want to root for this underdog. And also, like, it's more believable to me that he would be getting his butt kicked by this, like, big, strong guy. Or in Die Hard 2, when he's fighting on the side of the plane at the end of the movie on the wing, and he's fighting with one of the, like, army special forces guys, and he gets sucked into a plane engine. And, you know, it's like stuff like that where, I don't know, it just allows you to root for the character more and be more invested in their success. And it really is never done better than in Die Hard, you know, basically up through 4. Like, I love Live Free or Die Hard. I think that movie kicks ass. I will say is it's good. It's PG-13, but it is what it is. What is interesting about Die Hard as a series, because I know you had thrown out where it ranks in terms of action franchises, I think it's super interesting that none of these movies, none of the sequels, and really the, even like, I think the inspiration for the first movie, none, like as far as sequels go, none of them were written originally as Die Hard movies. They were like, just like action movies in a sense. Or like, I think this one's based off of a 1987 novel called 58 Minutes, where a police officer has to stop terrorists who take an airport hostage while his plane, his wife's plane circles overhead, blah, blah, blah. And he's got 58 minutes to do so. So it's like super interesting to me that in these cases, they saw a story like that and they were like, cool, just put John McClane in it and make it Die Hard. And yep. Like, and it's so funny because in this one, it takes place a year after the Nakatomi Plaza incident. And so everybody who he comes in contact with already knows who he is. So there isn't like, who the fuck are you? It's like, oh, McClane, you think you're hot shit because you did this? Get the fuck out of here. And so everybody already knows who he is. And it happens try to think about like the like mental breakdown you would have. That like one exact year later, you're taking down terrorists yet again, like in a completely different setting. It's insanity.
It is. No, it's crazy.
Pull it off though. They pull it off in that. They do. Like it doesn't come up. Like the way that this works is because they lean into it.
Yeah, they're self-aware. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So I posed the question, like, is the first three Die Hards as a franchise, is it in your top 5 of action movie franchises?
Man, it's gotta be because, I mean, obviously Fast and Furious is in there.
Yeah.
John Wick is in there now.
Yeah.
Die Hard, I would argue like I could watch Die Hard 1 through 4 and just be like, glued to my seat for all of them. And right. That is super rare. I'm trying to think of any others that would like, I would elevate to that are like pure action. Like I could say Mission Impossible probably would be, I mean, if you could call it like just pure like action franchise, right. I would say like my top, my God tier are like Fast and Furious and Mission Impossible. But man, this is right up there.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think that's fair. That's I would put all the same ones.
Like Indiana Jones, do you count that as an action franchise? Not really.
I mean, not really. Yeah, I would say it's more like action adventure in a similar vein of like The Mummy.
Right.
Is like an action adventure. Like it's kind of like a whole, it's its own subset of like action movie. And like, obviously, you know, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, those are like action movies, but I would say no, those are comic book movies.
Right.
And so I wouldn't, if I'm talking like purely, so like Rambo could be an option. I wouldn't put it, like Rambo is fun, but I wouldn't put it there. I would say maybe like Terminator you could put in the top 5.
Yeah, I suppose you could call that an action franchise.
It's just hard because like after Terminator 2, it like really starts to go down. Like Terminator 3 was still like pretty fun. But after that, I don't know, it was... Oh, actually, the last one was really good, too.
Dude, Dark Fate is kick-ass. Yeah.
Dark Fate was kick-ass. So, yeah, I would say that Terminator would probably be my
top. If you
top
count... yeah, I mean, if we want to count Terminator, it gets the lines start to get blurred a little bit, like, in terms of, like, what you would call...
Because you can talk about Aliens, like, the whole Alien franchise. And
right.
So, yeah, it gets kind of crazy. Sci-fi, like, Star Wars, But yeah, strictly action, I would say Die Hard as a franchise should be in the top five. And John Wick, for sure.
It's hard to pull off four freaking movies that are good.
Yeah.
With like three of them that are like extremely good.
Yeah.
So yeah, but yet the funny thing is nobody ever seems to give a shit about any of the Die Hards except the first one. Isn't that strange to you?
It's super weird.
Bizarre to me. Everybody's so obsessed with the first one, and like rightfully so, but I want people to like, I mean, where else are you going to see a naked William Sadler doing like Muay Thai
in his hotel room?
Hotel room, butt ass naked, like oiled up beyond belief, so muscular.
It's how you start the film. That's incredible.
That's the best. Like, I just love this movie because it's got so many like ridiculous action movie beats in it where like they say like there's a scene in the movie where after Bruce Willis just straight up kills a guy in the luggage claim area and everybody's real cavalier about it that he just murdered somebody, even if he is a cop, it's like, no dude, you just like smashed that guy's face.
Right.
And he's dead. So you should probably like chill out. Nonetheless, he gets the information on that guy who turns out he's like a ex Navy SEAL or whatever, like all black ops, all that kind of stuff. And he hands the Fred Thompson and Dennis Franz the paper, and they all have this look like, oh my God. Like we're all supposed to like be like, you know what this means, don't you? And then when they hijack like the terminal and stuff, I think Fred Thompson asks Bruce Willis, like, do you think this is their plan? And Bruce Willis is like, no, this is just the beginning. And it's just like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where you're just like, cool, I'm going to pause it here, make another bucket of popcorn and just get ready to roll, because this movie has so many amazing like mini action sequences, and they lean so heavily into the cheesiness of these action movie cliches. But it's also super early. This movie came out in 1990, so it's like this is still like during the invention period of creating these action movie cliches. This is still like very early on where they're pioneers, if you will, in creating these cliches, which makes it even better.
Yeah, man. The like early to mid 90s just was such a good era for action movies because it was so like free of having to be self-aware.
Yeah.
Where it was like, and I think like the Fast and Furious movies do a pretty good job of this now, where like they're fully, fully aware of how ridiculous these movies are, but but they're fun. Like Die Hard 2 is so fun. And that's all I'm asking for from a movie like this, is to just, I want to have a good time and I want to see John McClane go up against like 28 terrorists and just kill them all and like have good set pieces and have a bunch of shootouts and stuff. And I mean, it totally delivers on that front.
I do love it. It was like the director's note was like, double it. Like, double what? Double everything. Like, it's got to be a bigger explosion. Yeah. Double the crew that he has to fight. Like, double it all.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Oh, climax fight scene on a plane wing where he gets dropped in from a helicopter. Yep, done. Let's do that. Awesome.
Also, after he does his like naked Muay Thai thing, there's this like a thing I really like is I like seeing bad guy crews. Like I think, you know, in the first Die Hard where they're, you know, walking through the lobby and you're seeing all the different people who make up the team. This one has a great like coordinated. And if you had like a spoof of an action movie, you would definitely do it where the main villain, he starts walking down the hall. As he's walking down the hall, all the doors of the hotel are opening and closing like in a very coordinated way as his like crew files in line behind him. to show like how organized they are. But then if you're doing a spoof, you have it where it's like somebody messes it up. So he goes back to the end of the hall. Everybody goes back in their hotel rooms and they keep trying it until they get it right.
To time it right.
Right. But it's like such a great, like you're just, it puts you there. Like you're like, okay, there are about 20 bad guys. They all look like pretty badass. The main dude is this colonel. So like, you know, these are all going to be like ex-military dudes. So they're going to be really tough to go up against. Mm-hmm. And you just see like, this is a bigger crew than the first movie by at least like 5 to 7 people.
Right. And, you know, they want to make it seem like, you know, these are, you know, extremely well organized tactical dudes, which is a great foil for McClane, who's like a real rough and tumble, like I'm just flying by the seat of my pants here.
Totally.
Kind of guy, which is great. So we mentioned a butt naked William Sadler, which is an image that everyone should see. And
dude, he is body karate. He is some body karate.
Dude, he was like ripped.
Yeah.
I was like impressed. I didn't realize. He was a specimen in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So he plays Colonel Stewart, and he is part of a group that is going to intercept the plane of a deposed General Esperanza from some country. I can't remember if it was like a real country or a fake one that they've given this.
I'm pretty sure it's a fake one.
It's like Valverde?
Yeah.
I'm gonna be like so embarrassed if that's a real place.
Let me check.
And so he's coming to the States to be taken in by the Justice Department as part of like the war on drugs, basically. And it's like somewhat unclear. It's like not that unclear, I guess. It's like a little funky where he's kind of like a true believer in terms of fighting communism and stuff. So like they're going to free this guy. They're going to intercept his plane by taking over the entire airport. And then they're all going to fly to like some beach country or something.
Okay, this is cool, Steve. You'll like this. So Valverde, it's a fictional country.
Mm-hmm.
It's been used by writer and producer Steven De Suaza, who like wrote this movie, when his stories require a South or Central American locale. So it first appeared in Commando. He used it in Super Carrier, Die Hard 2. He used it in Adventure Inc. And then he also, he says it's where Predator takes place too. Like the jungles of Valverde. So like it's this like great, like secret little action movie country, which is incredible.
Dude, are you telling me Die Hard and Predator exist in the same fucking universe and you could have a John McClane Predator movie?
And so does Commando. That's incredible.
Dude. Okay, man. If you want to get Bruce Willis out of like the doldrums of whatever he's making these days.
First, don't tell him that.
Oh, trust me. I'm sure he knows. I don't think it's lost on him, but he's doing it.
No, probably not.
You get like, because I know that Arnold was like, he would love to come back. You get Dutch and John McClane to team up. Where like John McClane's going to a vacation and his plane like gets taken over and it like crashes in Valverde and like Dutch is back to like hunt, like something happened where like Dutch has to be there, but like or they could do it in the States, whatever. But in either way, you get Arnold and Bruce Willis to team up as their like two of their most famous characters to fight the Predator.
That's incredible.
They're all 20th Century Fox movies, dude. It could happen, and it's in universe.
Ooh. That's incredible. Because, you can have the dual thing. Like, he lands in the jungle, and then Dutch is, like, in the middle of trying to, like, hunt this, like, rogue predator. But then the terrorists have escaped. So he's like, I need to track them down. And so they're working together to track the predator and to track these terrorists.
Oh my God, dude.
Die Hard, you call it like, I don't know if you make it solely a Die, I guess you do. You make it a Die Hard movie and call it like the Taming of Valverde. And so then it's like, you get the Predator tie-in and it's just, Yeah, but I would definitely market it as a Die Hard movie, right?
Yeah, it would be Die Hard, comma Predator. So it'd be Die Hard Predator. I mean, you could do Die Hard Predator. I would love, oh man. Please sign me up.
I'm so glad I looked that up. That's remarkable.
That is incredible. You bring up a question here. Is Bruce Willis on your action star Mount Rushmore? That's an obvious yes. Like, okay. No doubt.
So who are your four?
Keanu Reeves is like the number one. Like,
yes.
I don't know if anybody has a better pedigree at this point for action than fucking Keanu Reeves.
I've gotten in so many arguments with people about this, that he is the number one. He has been in the most like good, important action movies of anybody because
and influential.
And influential. You got Point Break, you got Speed, you got The Matrix, and you got John Wick. Two of those are giant franchises that are like completely revitalized the action genre, like that style of act. Not like, obviously, we know we literally just brought up Fast and Furious because it's an action movie, but like that style of action movie was brought back with John Wick, and then The Matrix that changed everything. He's the number one.
That's like no question. Yeah, right. That's absolutely no question. I would say Keanu Reeves, Bruce Willis, Harrison Ford.
Okay.
And maybe Tom Cruise.
Ooh, so you're leaving off Stallone and Schwarzenegger. Oh no.
I know. I gotta take Tom Cruise off, and I gotta put maybe Schwarzenegger.
Okay.
I'm such a Harrison Ford guy, and I know he hasn't always done action, and I've got, you know, obviously Star Wars and Indiana Jones in my mind, because like the obvious choices are Stallone and Schwarzenegger. I'm trying, you know.
I know, I like it. I agree with you.
It's tough. I'll say this because I know it's like kind of fucking insane that I originally didn't even like include Stallone and Schwarzenegger. It's a harder choice than I think. Like probably the purest four would be Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Willis, and Reeves. That might be like the purest four. But I could easily make a case for Tom Cruise because of what he does with his stunts, and Harrison Ford because he was in friggin' Star Wars and Indiana Jones. And in the 90s, he did a lot of great action as well. Like, I'd argue movies like The Fugitive and Air Force One are like different types of action movies, but like just as good. Like, it doesn't have to be a hulking dude, you know, like a Stallone or a Schwarzenegger doing that stuff. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I could be way off, but.
No, I like it. So mine is Keanu Reeves is my number one. Then Harrison Ford, because he, different type of action movie. Because I want some diversity on my Mount Rushmore. Right. You got to have a hulking guy though. So I'm going to put Schwarzenegger on there just because of how good and legendary Terminator was. And he was like the action star of the 80s into like the early 90s. And then my fourth is Tom Cruise, even though, I mean, just like, think about it, like Top Gun, amazing. And the Mission Impossible franchise, I would say probably has now surpassed the Die Hard franchise for like consistently raising the bar and being consistently good after seven movies, which is almost impossible.
Right.
And the fact that he does his own stunts. The first Jack Reacher movie is really great. Like, what's really hard.
Edge of Tomorrow is great.
Oh yeah. Edge of Tomorrow. That's what's hard with Bruce Willis is like beyond the Die Hard movies in terms of like action star. Cause he's in like, he's a great actor and he's in some like really great stuff like Sixth Sense and stuff like that. But it's hard to be like, okay, like, what are his, give me three other great action movies that he like leads. And it's just like, I
mean, you could say, I guess you could say Unbreakable counts, potentially. Okay. It's not action, I guess, but you've got Armageddon.
Okay.
Looper is really good. I mean, he, you know, however you feel about like Red and
okay,
Red 2, 12 Monkeys.
Okay, that's a good one. That adds some beef to it.
Yeah. Sin City.
Okay. So I think there is, because he's like right there. Him and Stallone are like right on the outside looking in.
Boy, that is, it's hard to think about Sylvester Stallone not being on the action star Hall of Mount Rushmore.
Because I mean, we literally just did Cliffhanger. We had Daybreak, obviously the Rambo franchise. I mean, you couldn't really count the Rocky movies. They're not really action movies. They're sports movies. Oh, and, I mean, but then all the Expendable movies, like those are all like super awesome.
Yeah, that's tough. I would say if you had to dump anybody, it would be, man, maybe Tom Cruise, but I don't know, man.
The
Mission Impossible movies,
they're so good, but he would be my first one off, because like having two tentpole franchises as an action star is like so impossible, and right. Both Harrison Ford and Keanu Reeves have that.
Right. There's like no, yeah, they don't, they're so, ensconced in the Mount Rushmore that there's no way. Like, I think the wild card here is the one that came out of nowhere recently is like Keanu Reeves, because the John Wick series made it an impossibility that he couldn't be on that list. And then you start to look at guys like, then it's a three-man race between like Tom Cruise, Schwarzenegger and Stallone, and who knows, someday The Rock might start to make some noise and be on that list. I don't know if that would be the case. I want to see I think we've talked about this like 50 times. I want to see The Rock start doing some like R-rated shit. Like, I want him to like, come on, man. Like, make your Terminator.
Yeah. I want super gory. Like, I want him ripping out throats. Or punch, like caving skulls in, like give me The Rock like After Dark, and just go for it.
What's the thing those, like Schwarzenegger always did that. Like he would, it's like one day he's making Terminator 2, and then the next day it's Kindergarten Cop.
Yes,
like let's go, you can do it. It doesn't have to all be Disney shit, man.
Yep.
Anyway, please come on the podcast, Rock. We love you, Mr. Rock.
We do. I love The Rock. Oh my God, he's. He's great. He's one of my top three or four wrestlers. He's on my Mount Rushmore of wrestlers, which would be Sting, The Rock, Stone Cold, and The Undertaker.
I love Shawn Michaels so much.
Oh God, he is great. He is really great.
Like, I would probably Sting, The Rock, Stone Cold, and then maybe Shawn Michaels.
Okay, that's fair.
I love The Undertaker, but like Shawn Michaels is so ridiculous.
He was. I just love The Undertaker's gimmick so much, especially Paul Bearer, like when it was just so insane in the 90s. It was, there was nothing like that. That show was crazy.
The Attitude Era.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So let's see. We are now, so the stage is kind of set. Bruce Willis has used his instincts to follow some suspicious looking dudes into the luggage area. Sure enough, a shootout ensues.
They quickly are like, he's like, hey, what are you guys doing back here?
They're like, they pull out the guns.
And they just pull out their guns and start shooting. Like, they don't even try to like lie about it. They're just like, well, first
they're like, oh, we work here. And he's like, I don't know about that. And then they're just like, boom, 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 boom. Like, instead of just being like, you know, Or even like letting him get closer and then killing him.
Yeah.
Like he's still like 50 feet away. But he kills one of them. So he gets into a real fun, excellent fight. Has a bunch of good quips running around. He's like, what is this, a tag team? as they're both going after him, which is awesome. And he crushes the dude in like the conveyor belt thing, which I don't know if it would kill you, but his face gets smashed. So he's dead. So now he gets taken to like the head of the airport police, played by Dennis Franz, who, as you quote it, was born to play a cop.
Dude, that motherfucker from NYPD Blue is the most Chicago-y police officer that's not a police officer that's ever lived on this earth. Like, he is so amazing. I literally stopped the movie for about an hour while I went on a wormhole of watching NYPD Blue clips.
Oh, I love it.
It's so good. It.
And he plays such an asshole in this with like his like 80s hair bobbing up and down. And he just shits all over John McClane the entire movie, even though John McClane is right at every turn. And right. John McClane's the only dude trying to save anybody throughout this entire movie. And he still like acts like such a dick to him.
People are shitting on McClane this entire movie. As he, it's not like he's just like being so like disregarding safety. He didn't start a gunfight in the middle of the airport. Like, he followed these guys to like a back room. He tried to like actually just investigate and ask some questions. They fired on him first. And right. Dennis Franz, the entire movie, just makes him out to be this like this bad guy who's like in bed with the terrorists. When it's like, no, you moron, I could just like leave and you guys would be so fucked. But I'm staying and putting myself in harm's way because it's my duty as a police officer.
Right. Also, Dennis Franz and like everybody at the airport wanted to just like sweep under the rug the fact that there were two suspicious guys that opened fire on John McClane, where they're just like, don't you know it's the fucking Christmas weekend? Like, what do you want us to do? It's like, I don't know, man. Like, something's going on here because like two guys just like 9/11 must have changed everything, because apparently you could have brought tons of weapons into an airport. I know they say that they were like these expensive weapons they have.
The Glocks,
they
don't show up on your X-ray machines.
Yeah, right. It's like sure.
Okay, whatever.
But I'm sure that today it would have all been found. But in the 90s, it was lax enough to where you could like sneak a gun in. That old woman that's hanging out with Holly she's got a stun gun. And so got that on board.
On a plane.
Yeah. So she's got that on a plane showing it to Holly. So apparently maybe in the 90s, a three-person shootout, which like totally would have been heard by other people. Here's the funny thing about this movie is not only would there's 15,000 people at that airport. No doubt some people are going to be hearing the gunshots going off like in the next room, but also there's a massive plane crash
on the runway they can see out the window.
And there's not a moment of panic. People are more pissed about the flights being delayed than the fact that there's this giant fireball.
Yeah, no one gives a fuck that 300 people just died. They're like, so wait, you mean to tell me my flight's going to be delayed even longer now while they clean that shit up?
Yeah. That's how people would react too.
Oh yeah, people are super selfish. I mean, this movie is like, it encapsulates 90s airports, and like they look like the place to be. Like, everyone's smoking and drinking like wherever they want. People don't give a fuck about any of the rules. Everyone's got weapons. Yeah. Like, it seems like the coolest goddamn.
There's a kid just swinging a sword.
Yeah, it's like Miami in the 80s, dude. It's like the coolest place to be. And now I'm just like sad it's like that's not like that now.
Yeah, I know. Now it's like, you know, it's exciting if you're going to your terminal and there's like an Auntie Anne's pretzels.
Right.
And that's like as good as it gets.
I always feel very like adult every time we have a Vegas weekend. No matter how early my flight is, I'll go sit at like the bar at the airport and I'm like, I'm an adult. I'm a big kid. Can I have a beer, a sir?
Yeah.
And I love airports. Like I don't travel too. That much. I fucking love being in airports.
I know, dude. I'll go 6 hours early to a flight. I don't fucking care.
Flight to Detroit. You'll show up 6 hours early.
Because I don't want to be late, and just in case something happens, like traffic or like there's like a slightly longer line for security. But also like there's nothing better than getting to that terminal, finding your seat where nobody else is, and then like ripping open a book that you just bought at the bookstore.
Yes.
Oh, dude. get it.
I thought you were going to say ripping some farts. I was like, what?
Ripping some huge fucking ass.
Okay, so have you ever been to Hawaii?
No.
Okay, so Hawaii is amazing. The only thing that sucks about Hawaii, their airports are the most boring airports ever.
Really?
They have, yeah. So like once you get past security, like usually once you get past the, like there's food options and stuff before security and after security. Mm-hmm. But in Hawaii, like once you get past security, and my wife like clued me in on this because I had never been there when we went on our honeymoon. And she's like, hey, if you want like food or anything, like get it before we go through security because there's nothing. Like literally like a vending machine. Like there's not a newsstand. There's not anything. It's just like,
why?
Here's, I don't know. It's like, here's your room. Go sit in this room. And then you get on your plane right over there. And like, that's all it is.
It's, wow.
It is a, I think they do it as a very harsh reminder that you're leaving paradise. So fucking get used to it. And like, yeah, right. Like you're not going to have a cool, cozy Hawaii airport experience. Like you're now in this dreary ass room. There's yeah. no TVs. Get ready to be on a tube for 5 hours.
Right. Get used to your regular life, bitch.
Yeah, it's over.
You could have had it all. You could have stayed here and opened a beachside bar, but no, you had to go back to your normal ass life.
Yeah, you go back to being an accountant, you fucking idiot. Like,
man, no, you're so right. I love airports. I once had to sleep at an airport. I had to sleep when I used to work for the Associated Press and I was going to do spring training, my flight got so delayed out of Canton, Akron in Ohio that I got the last flight. And so I got into Dallas when it was already closed. And so I just slept on the floor, which is also like an insane thing to be like, hey, let me just go sleep on the floor of a place where literally thousands of people have been. In the last like day. That's yes. disgusting. So, but I loved it. I fucking loved it. And
That's the dream. Sleep on an airport floor.
Sleep on an airport floor and like waiting for like the Cinnabon to like open at like 4 a.m. And you're like the first one in line. And it's just some dude who's just like, fuck. Like, what do you want? Like I just opened.
He's like, hey buddy, like these are all from yesterday. I don't start making new ones till 7 a.m.
Yeah, like, I don't care, baby. I loved my other experience that I loved at an airport was after a Vegas trip. It was like during like that Electric Daisy Festival, I think it's called.
Oh yeah.
And so it's like a big desert drug fest. And we were in the airport, ready to get on our flight. We were at the terminal and some guy was wearing a backpack and he came to our gate and he dropped his bag in the middle of the floor and walked into the tunnel. So he just left his bag, which is like pretty much the most suspicious thing you could possibly do at an airport in front of a bunch of people. So everybody was a little uneasy about that, especially because he just walked into the tunnel where there was no plane yet. He just like walked into the tunnel.
Oh shit. Oh, okay. It wasn't like he was boarding.
No. He just straight up was like on acid or something because then he climbed out of the tunnel onto the roof of the tunnel and then just like ran onto the roof of the airport and like was just like on the roof.
And, oh my God.
And the crazy thing is like nobody really, maybe because it was Vegas, nobody seemed to care. We were all just kind of like, oh man, that's crazy. Oh, well, so I'm pretty sure maybe that is the case. Like if we did see a giant fireball from wreckage of a plane that blew up, we would all have that same reaction. Like, oh man, I hope my flight's not delayed.
I think that's a good point though, that what people put up with at an airport really depends on like the city in which they're in. So like, LaGuardia,
honestly, that's true. Airports are torture chambers.
Yeah, LaGuardia, JFK, you're like, I'm in hell. like, whatever. Everything is on the table here.
Yeah.
Vegas is like, there's nobody too weird or strange.
Right.
Like, everybody is either super excited, like, I'm going to have such fun time this weekend, or like, this was the worst. Like, I've been here for 4 days. I need to go see my family and tell them, like, John's not going to college.
Yeah.
Because Keno has really bad odds.
Like, I never made it out of the airport. I stayed in that box where they let you smoke in, and I never made it outside.
Yes. But then if you go to, like, out of St. Louis, it's like, oh, well, you need to be very polite and respectful here. Because Lindbergh, like, flew out of this airport. And so, like, you do not get out of line here.
Right. Or, like, the Denver one is really beautiful and huge. And there's, like, a fun mystery to it. Because, like, people think there's, like, stuff. There's, like, an underground
facility. I fly Southwest a lot. So, like, that's always a hub from Los Angeles.
Yep.
I go to that one a lot. Yep. It's a good one.
Love Denver. But that's true. Yeah. LaGuardia is, like, it is funny to think that, like, because, like, airports got you, man. Like, once you're in, you can't fucking leave.
No.
And they're like, we can do whatever the hell we've got. It's like Spider-Man. He's like, I got you for 3 minutes. Fucking
Bonesaw
macho man.
Bonesaw here.
Bonesaw is ready. I'm telling you, that's, I think what happens is, like, all airports are run by absolute psychopaths who are like, it's all a social experiment to see what humans will and like what we'll put up with, and they keep like turning up the notch a little bit just to like, I think flying in airports are just one big giant social experiment to see like the limits of humanity's like tolerance and patience for stuff like that, where it's like, all right, here's what we're gonna do. We're just going to tell them it's the middle of July and we're going to say that the planes are getting de-iced. And we're just going to see how long it takes for people to like want to like claw their eyes out. And then, you know, maybe, and then the next week we'll tweak it a little bit more and we'll try this. We'll charge $45 for a beer next month and see what that does.
I think you're onto something. I think it's actually a combination of things. I think it's the government seeing kind of working with the CIA to like see the limits of humanity, but it's a cross project with a bunch of name brand restaurants to see then how happy like a TGI Fridays can make somebody in the face of like the most adverse conditions of being in the airport for 3 days straight. It's like, hey, we have a Bloomin' Onion over here. And it's like, oh, well, all of my problems are gone. So like, I think there's been a program they've been like rolling out for the last 30 years.
It's like Burger King is like, bet you like us now, huh, bitch? And they're hoping that like bleeds over into when you're out of the airport and you have this like psychological association with Burger King, that like Burger King is the thing that saved you.
Yes, that one time you were stuck
in an airport.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, when you were in... well, that's what's funny with Burger King is like, hey, we're open and McDonald's has a big line, so why not us?
Yeah, that's the new slogan.
Yeah. That's like,
what's so bad about us?
Yeah, whether or not I get Burger King is definitely predicated on how close my flight is to departure. Because if I have an hour, I'm not getting Burger King. I'm going to wait in line at any other establishment.
Dude, that's
but
a tough...
if it's like, if I have 15 minutes, like, yeah, I'll take a Whopper. Like, it's still delicious.
That's still tough, though, because I would have a... It's like, I'm always very careful about what I eat before a flight because the last thing I want to do
is
get,
fair,
like Whopper sweats while I'm in my seat. Yeah. Like, fucking farting all over the place.
Or, like, the monsters you bring on. Like, I'll eat this on the plane. It will be a nice little air picnic.
Yeah. A picnic in the sky.
Yeah, I'm going to take my shoes off and like let my toesies breathe while I eat my double Whopper. It's like, why are you a monster?
Yeah. That nice fast food smell wafting through the cabin.
Just the worst, man. Oh, God.
Jesus. That's enough to make you want to crash the plane.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's please crash the plane if somebody does that next to you.
So. So the you brought this up in the notes too. The And we mentioned obviously the plane exploding here. Basically what happens is Stewart gains control of the all communications, and they turn off all the lights on the airstrip. So none of the planes really know where to land. And they lower the sea level so that the planes misjudge how close the ground actually is, which is like pretty diabolical.
It is.
And to prove how serious they are about these demands that they get a plane to move Esperanza onto so they can fly away, they crash a plane, which is like an extremely like sinister thing to do. It's shocking when that plane explodes because you're like, oh fuck, that's like 300 people that just got incinerated.
Yeah.
It's kind of nuts.
If you like can disassociate yourself from like an explosion in an action movie just being like a spectacle, it's like the most villainous thing that any villain does in the entire Die Hard franchise. Like they just murdered, and you get like a little bit of like color on the plane. You get to see it's a plane from it's like British Airways. You see a grandmother who's excited to see her grandkids. You see like little kids running in the aisles. It's like, don't show me that. Just show me like the captain of the plane. I don't want to like know how many kids died in this like plane crash.
Also, like they say, as the plane's like catching fire, you hear the captain and his crew being like, we're going to die. And it's like, oh my God. Jesus Christ.
I feel like that was like an editor fucking with him, but nobody caught it time. And they're just like, whatever, we'll keep it in.
He goes a little bit too far where one of them's like, I'm pissing my pants.
You can only remove one thing. They're like, I guess we have to take out that line then.
I'll take out the piss my pants, whatever. Another character. So we haven't even talked about like Holly.
Yes, we have a good B plot going on up in the air.
Which is pretty fun. I think they like had no idea really what to do with her because like she doesn't really like, all she gets to do is like electrocute Thornburg. And
who's back from the first movie?
Who's back? And he has a restraining order on her. And he kind of, it's like, I actually do think he gets treated a little unfairly in this because he's just doing his job and that he's reporting like what's going on. Like he's doing it in kind of like a slimy asshole kind of way. But he gets his hands on the transmission from the flight from the tower on a different frequency saying like, hey, terrorists are taking over, whatever, you know, and he relays it to his news station. It's all over the news. I don't really see what's so bad about that Holly decides that she's going to stun gun him.
Right.
But like,
he's not like trying to, he's not demanding like, I need to see the captain, like let me in there. He's
right.
He like literally goes and sneaks into the bathroom to call his station. Like he doesn't do anything in this movie that's bad.
And as a journalist, that's like exactly what he should be doing is informing the public of what's going on in a situation that he has like firsthand knowledge of. So it's like super bizarre that he gets his ass kicked up in the plane, but whatever. The other character that I feel bad for is there's a reporter from a news station who's trying to do some interviews based on this like big Esperanza plane arrival. And first she sees Colonel Stewart, who is like walking around the concourse, even though he's like about to like take over, you know, he's just like this walking around as a very recognizable figure. And she asks him for an interview and he goes, yeah, I got two words for you, fuck and off, or fucking you. I can't remember which one he uses. And then
yes, it's great. It's so good. Also, as
but then McClane tells her to fuck off too.
Yes. And that's where he finds out. Because then she's like, oh, that was like nicer than what the colonel had to say. He's like, that's who that was. Like, because they run into each other earlier. He's like, he must be behind it then. So it's like the big aha moment. But it is like super weird that like the Justice Department is like, oh, like let's transport Esperanza to like Dulles Airport in D.C. during the holiday weekend during rush hour, and not just do it, you know, like at 1 a.m. when the airport's closed, when they can like lock the airport down, or like early in the morning, or not on the weekend, not on Christmas Eve. Like, what are they doing?
And also, if it's like that big of a deal, why is no one there? It's just a regular flight, and like
like, why don't you have like the army there now, or, you know, like a whole squad of like Justice Department and, you know,
it's just
officials.
Two dudes like hanging out at the airport, like in trench coats. Like, hey, we're here. I can't tell you about it. Hi, Mom. I'm on the news.
Right. Yeah. I go, oh, I guess we'll get that guy.
It's crazy.
Wherever, I don't know. Where's his flight? Like, it's just like, this is like a major.
And we never see those guys again.
Oh, that's true.
It's so super just, weird.
They're just chilling at the beginning. What, at the bar or something?
She's doing a news story like in the middle, like where you would sit to wait for a flight. Like,
oh, they're sitting there saying, oh, no comment or something. Yeah. Yeah.
And we never see those guys again. Guys? I don't know. They just disappear.
That's a good point. Oh, well, fuck it. Whatever. There's lots of incredible inconsistencies with the plot in this, and I don't even care. I couldn't care less. I love it. Because you get like, you get the sequence where, you know, Dennis, where like, you know, the airport security has its own SWAT team and they all get their asses obliterated
so like badly.
Immediately. Also by Robert Patrick, who's in this pre T-1000.
Yep. That's like 2 years before T-2 comes out. So it's very fun to see him. That's an awesome sequence too, where they get, so they're a guy in the air traffic control is like, hey, there's this terminal that's not open yet. And we have a transponder there that we can like switch to frequency and secretly tell all the planes that like there's a hijacking or that they've taken over the airport to disregard them. And so they're like, okay, we're going to send a SWAT team. And they immediately get ambushed. They don't shoot a single guy. They get destroyed.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there's so much fucking work that Colonel Stewart and these guys have to go through to like,
oh my God,
get this general. Like you couldn't, there was no easier way for you guys to do all this without having to like assume that all the other people are going to be making these moves. So that way, like, it's like, oh yeah, we assumed that they were going to go to this other terminal so we could ambush them. And we assumed that, you know, they would do X, Y, and Z. And then we also had to hack into the tower and like take over the frequency. We have to like we have to set up, like they had to set up their own like control tower basically in that like abandoned church. And it was like, couldn't you have just like, Colonel Stewart has pull. Couldn't he have just like gotten onto that flight with like Esperanza or something?
Also,
and then just
like
they just take the plane.
It doesn't matter because Esperanza kills everybody on the plane and lands it himself. And like, what's the plan? Like, he could just fly to a different place. Like, he could just turn around. Because right, they don't have an escort anymore. The escort leaves them over the ocean. And so he could just fly to another country.
Why does he even care? Why does he even give a fuck about Colonel Stewart and these guys if he does that?
That part doesn't make any, I like realized that for the first time. I still love this movie with all my heart, but like their plan doesn't even matter because if he kills, like it'd be one thing. All they had to do too was like have him land, like have the plane land and have their men kill the pilot and the guard. Then it's like, okay, that's why they needed him. But he kills everybody on the plane and lands it himself. So he could have just like landed somewhere else. And then the colonel then could help him get over the border or whatever he paid them for. So like they don't
really
need this airport at all.
He's super grumpy too, because when he gets out, he's like really mad at all of the delays that are happening, where he's like, is this how you're running things? And like he gets involved in like, you know, he's got to be part of this elaborate plan now where like, okay, yeah, no, you're right, because he lands the plane at the airport, even though he now controls it. Then he's got to be part of some elaborate ruse, which like granted in the movie, it's a kick-ass fucking plot twist, but there's a second army group that comes in where
it's awesome.
He was, you know, led by, I can't remember his name, the actor, but
he plays Fitz Wallace on The West Wing.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Yes.
So we'll call him Fitz Wallace. So, Fitz Wallace is leading a group of army guys that you think is working with John McClane to stop Colonel Stewart, but then they're actually on the same side and they're all going to go get on a plane together and have like a big giant 40-man beach vacation somewhere. And it's like, if you're the general, it's like, wait a minute, why is this other group now involved? Why does this second group have to come in and like get involved? It's so crazy.
So I guess if I'm trying to figure out like why he needs, if he's able to have the plane and like what he's getting out of the colonel, I guess the only thing he's getting, if the plan for him is to kill the pilots, land the plane himself, the colonel does provide him a larger, presumably fully fueled plane to another country. Whereas,
it's the fuel probably, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess you can make the argument the plane's going to be low on fuel and there's no way, and they can track that plane. So I guess that's the thing. He can't fly to another country because then they can just track that plane and he wouldn't be able to get very far.
Yeah. I mean, I could see that being the case, but like if I'm him after I killed killed the pilot and the co-pilot and that guard, it's like, I might take my chances if it's like, oh shit, I'm in a plane by myself and I can fly this thing. Like
totally. Well, cause he has to fly the giant plane too. It's not like we have another pilot. They need him to fly the big plane for him too.
I know. I always think like whenever I see that sequence at the end where the plane blows up and everybody gets incinerated, I always think there's like 42 henchmen just like chilling in the cabin. And I'm always like, there's got to be like a guy in there that like wasn't really a true believer and he was kind of just like doing it for a paycheck. And he's just kind of like,
I don't really there want to
just because like a guy recruited him or some friend recruited him. Cause like, I always wonder about those henchmen in movies where like, cause they set up this huge like base of operations in the church and there's like 30 dudes just running around doing stuff. And you have to wonder that there's like one or two of these guys that are like, fuck, like we just blew up a plane of people, man. I don't know if I'm cut out for this. I mean, I guess I'll stick with it, but this is pretty messed up. And like, unfortunately he would get blown up too. But
oh, for sure.
I always think that about like when you have like that many henchmen.
Well, two things. We should do a movie about a henchman who's like reluctant as he's seeing the madness that his boss is like laying waste to the world.
I love that.
But also like, I like the idea of like, cause they're all talking about how they're going to like on a beach vacation. The henchman who's like, I have like plans for the holidays. Like my family's coming to town. Like I thought I was going to get the check. Like I didn't anticipate being gone for 3 weeks. Like I have a dog.
No one really knows I'm even here. Right. I could probably just take my money and go. Like I don't I don't really want to go to the Caribbean. I'm fine.
Yeah. I'm very pale. I burn easily. I'm not packed for this. Like also they aren't packed for that trip.
Like right, there's no luggage. It's just them and their
luggage.
Also, the Fitzwallace group of guys show up in different fatigues, and then they just change into like white, a white uniform at some point. For no reason.
The snowmobile ones. Yeah, the snowmobile uniform.
Oh, yep. Dude, the snowmobile. See, okay, so this movie, this is why Die Hard 2 works as well as it does. Is that yes, you're basically watching Die Hard again. But like you said, it's like everything's like dialed up a notch. So there are so many good set pieces in this. You've got the first shootout. You've got the second shootout with the SWAT team and John McClane. You've got the snowmobile set piece. You've got the like insane final 20 minutes of that final battle on the plane.
On the wing of the plane, yeah.
McClane is dropped in from a fucking helicopter and he fights some dudes on the wing of the helicopter on the wing of the plane. And it's like this incredible sequence where the plane is like trying to lift off and, you know, the Fitzwallace, who I should probably get his name right, but Fitzwallace gets, I think he's Grant is what his name is. He gets sucked into the plane engine and there's the final fight between him and Stewart. It's just like nonstop for like 25 minutes. And it's like, dude, this kicks ass.
It does. And they blow up the plane earlier and kill a bunch of people, which is something you never happens in an action movie, where it's like there's always the threat, maybe a hostage or three that you like is killed, like in Air Force One. But you never have like hundreds of people be murdered during an action movie.
Right.
As part, like, it's like the threat. And it's like, oh no, they actually did this and they can do this to every plane because they have no way of being able to land during this blizzard. So it's wild. Like they make some decisions. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's needed for you to feel like Holly is in actual danger because her plane is running out of fuel because it doesn't have a place to land. And so then, so with them being willing to like just out of nowhere, blow up a plane, that puts it, that adds that tension. And I think what Die Hard also does really well as a rated R action franchise for the most part, for the first three, is that it utilizes that R rating.
Like, it does.
It doesn't like skimp on the gore, the profanity and the like, just like overall violence. And it's needed to, I don't know. It's just such a like, I don't want to say grim, but like gritty kind of world that John McClane lives in that, you know, you're always like, oh, these dudes mean business. Like you never like, that was one problem I had with the fourth Die Hard was, I mean, I love it. I really do. But there's never that moment where, because it's not rated R, there's a limitation of what you can do. It's like, oh, they're just like shutting down the power grid and controlling the country's power grid. And it's like, oh, okay, that's cool, I guess. There's never like that moment where you're like, oh, fuck. Like, you know, they blew up this town block or something. You know, I don't know, whatever. But yeah, I don't know. They make use of the rating.
You're right. Because like in the first one, Takagi gets killed. And you're like, oh, damn, like they will kill everybody to get into that vault. And this one, they blow up the plane. And in the third one, the movie starts with an explosion in like Wall Street that kills several people. And there's a bomb in a school. And so you're like, oh, damn, like they definitely ratchet it up. You definitely have the imminent threat. You get to see it like visualized and spelled out to you. So you understand the danger. And yeah, in the third one, I mean, Samuel L. Jackson is the perfect partner for John McClane because he's also there to play, there to swear. And he is also just an everyman. Like it's so smart making him, his name is Zeus. And he runs a Radio Shack type store.
Right.
And to not give him another police, a police partner, to just have it be a random dude that he is stuck with because Jeremy Irons character Simon says that he has to like be with him all day. So these first three movies, like they knew what they were doing. And it's even more amazing that the second and third one weren't even like, they didn't even start as Die Hard movies.
No, they were just action scripts that they were like, hey, you know what would make this better? Let's throw some John McClane in there. And that's why like, there's really not much of a, it's funny because like for having five movies, there's really no backstory to John McClane. It's just like, there is no depth to this character whatsoever. It's literally just Bruce Willis being put in some weird situation and then just like shooting his way out of it. And I mean, it works, but it's kind of incredible that they've never once ever tried to like, I know he gets like divorced from Holly at like some point.
Right. Oh, the question is like, what's Holly's last name? And that tells you like the state of his personal life. Is it Gennaro or is it McClane?
Right. And then the kids get involved.
Yes.
The kids get involved and like, you know, his daughter goes from Gennaro at the beginning to McClane at the end of Die Hard 4. So you're like, oh, she loves him now. You know, it's like, okay. But yeah, so weird that they don't give him like any depth whatsoever.
A couple more like fun appearances. Al is back.
Yep, and Al, baby. And so of course, Al, like pounding Twinkies.
Oh, he's pounding Twinkies. So Al helps him with like IDing. McClane gets the help of like a woman at the airport who wants to bang him so bad.
Yes, wants it. She's like amazed that he's using the fax.
Yeah, she is like super attractive.
Yeah.
to his credit, but he's like, I'm married. Just the facts, miss. But
that was a good, that was a good pun.
Yeah. So John is LAPD now. If you'll recall, in the first movie, he's NYPD, but now he is like since moved to Los Angeles. Al is also LAPD. So I'm wondering like if they work together now, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or at least like they have a professional relationship if they're not in the same like district or office or whatever.
What do you think? Is he a detective? Is John McClane just, is he just a police officer or is he a detective?
I get a sense he's a detective. Like
they don't really make that clear, do they?
Yeah. I don't see him being like a patrol cop. I see him like, I don't even know. Like I see him doing like vice beats and stuff. Like I don't see him like being part of a homicide and like solving right. a crime.
Like I see him being like he's breaking up drug rings and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't see him being like delicate with like an SVU like murder case or something where you're just like, oh my God. No.
Or if he normally is, but there like just so happens to be these like two times that he was just like stopping global terrorists.
Oh, that would be like really funny if he's like this very like put together, like very gentle, delicate police officer who helps like people who like children who have been molested or like women who have been raped. But we never see that side of him. And like, couldn't you see that though?
Because like, he's so reluctant in these movies. He's always talking to himself and being like, God damn it, motherfucker. You know, like, John, what did you get yourself into? It's like, I actually could see that being the case where like, he typically is like a very reserved, methodical.
I love that idea.
He totally is. He's not a loose cannon. It's just that like, when the beast has to come out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm very excited for that new Bob Odenkirk movie where you force the main character to like unleash the like, you know, the John Wick within themselves.
It's John Wick. Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's like, I didn't want to do this to you, but you forced me to. And now everyone around you in your world will die. And you're just like, oh God. Okay. I'm sorry.
I love a good, I'm out of the game type of character yes. who gets forced back into it and goes on like a rampage.
Yes.
That's the best.
And I love when they're just like a character. I mean, that's, we're talking about our love of John Wick and just like they're a character of mythical proportion where everybody knows like, why did you kill John Wick's dog? Right. Why would you do that? And now
he's coming for all of us.
Yeah.
I do forget by the third movie of John Wick, like how that whole thing started. By the end of John Wick 3, you're like, wait, where did this begin?
Yes.
It's awesome.
So I have two semi-hot takes that I'm going to throw out there. I'll argue, and I said this at the top, that this is the most powerful version of John McClane we get. Because if you'll recall, it's only a year removed from the first movie, so he's not much older. If you'll recall, in the first movie, he doesn't have his shoes for pretty much most of the movie. So he's at like this massive disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And then in the third movie, he's super fucking hungover. Him and Holly have like, they're split skis and like, he's not in a good frame of mind for the first probably 45 minutes to an hour of that film. Mm-hmm. So that's my argument. This is like the best John McClane we get in terms of like his ability to fight the bad guys.
Okay. I would argue that he becomes almost superhuman in the fourth one because he's like sliding on a jet at one point and he is like gets in that fight with Maggie Q and they're in the elevator shaft and like in that car and stuff and like he's doing like insane shit in the elevator shaft. There's something about him in the fourth one that's like starting to veer into like superhero territory where he's doing like things that defy the laws of physics. And okay, so
if you go with just the original three.
Oh, then by far the second one. Yeah. But I would totally agree with you on that.
And then my other hot take is like, this is the best use of Yippee-ki-yay motherfucker.
Oh fuck. Yeah.
Okay.
The end of this movie is he cuts the fuel line to the plane and it's just like leaking fluid as it's trying to like take off. And he's got his lighter because he's been smoking this entire movie and he's lying on the runway after being like shoved off the plane. And he and he lights the trail of fuel and says, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. And the plane just explodes. And it's the second giant fireball everybody in the airport sees. It rules. It's so kick-ass. Like, it's such a, like, oh, also this movie has some of the most insane. So that's cool. That's awesome and kick-ass. And I totally agree with you on that. This movie also is awesome because it has a sequence where John McClane is stuck in a plane and all the guys are shooting at him. And then they cartoonishly throw like 12 grenades into the cockpit. And the only way he can get out is he uses the eject seat and flies up into the sky as the plane explodes.
So they blew up three planes in this movie. I forgot about the third one. Yeah.
Also, when they blow up the plane, the terrorists are there. Colonel Stewart and his buds are in like a truck, and they see some fire trucks coming and they're like, let's get out of here. And they get out of there. But like nobody, no car follows them or anything.
I thought the same thing. I'm like, they're not that far away.
Like, where the fuck are you going?
Yeah, they're the only car like that's out there. Everything like else is shut down.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that like one of the like eight fire trucks that were coming would be like, hey, I think that truck that just peeled out that had a bunch of dudes with weapons, those might be the terrorists.
Dude, I like that for the first half of the movie. They rely on like airport security to be solving this like terrorist plot.
I know.
And then eventually it's like, oh, we'll bring in the military to help us. And it takes place in Washington, D.C., you know, where like the president lives. So I'm pretty sure like even back in the 90s, the Secret Service would be involved in this in some capacity.
Oh, totally. I also love seeing Fred Thompson in movies.
Yeah.
Because he was a senator. So he served from, I was just looking it up. He served in the Senate from 1994 to 2003. So it's quite possible that his role as Trudeau possibly got him elected to the Senate.
That's incredible.
So it's very possible that people liked Fred Thompson enough in Die Hard 2 that they were like, let's let this dude represent us in the Senate. And honestly, he is good in this. So I can see that.
Yes.
I also love at the end of this movie when Holly gets off her plane when it lands safely and McClane is there to greet her. He's like fucked up. His face is all bloody. Like he's limping. He's got like, you know, his shirt's all torn up and everything. He's all dirty and everything. And she doesn't even like say a word about it. She doesn't even ask like, what happened to you? They just like hug. And she's just like, what's like, why does this keep happening to us? But she doesn't even like question it.
I like how it's like us. And he's like, oh yeah, us. This must have been really tough for you this time around. Right.
Yeah, you were getting drunk on champagne up in the plane. But yeah, right. No, I mean, I guess that was the same for both of us.
You know what like sucks? This is like Christmas Eve. So now they have to like if you have a small kid that you've let listen to this podcast, pause it now because I'm gonna ruin a childhood illusion. Okay, that was your warning. Now they have to go home and like play Santa Claus for their fucking kids. And then John McClane has to build a bunch of shit the next morning. So he doesn't even get to sleep in after this like terrorist plot being stopped.
It's like one of those like little tykes, like mini kitchen sets or something. And he's like having the hardest fucking time building it. Or also like he's hanging out with his mother-in-law who like he obviously doesn't like at the beginning of this movie.
Yes.
So like, the next day is him at his mother-in-law's and like you'd have to imagine like a bunch of family members are coming over and it's him like with like no doubt a huge concussion and he's like bloodied all to all hell and he's like sitting there as like 25 family members are like having a Christmas like party around him.
Well, also, you know what he's doing early in the morning? He's going to the tow yard to get her car because it gets towed in the opening scene.
Yeah.
And you know for a fact the mother-in-law is every time everyone's talk like when Holly's bringing up like John stopped that like plot last night, the mother-in-law is like, yeah, but he got my car towed after every time people are asking questions about it. She's probably just, you know, like jabbing him more about the car being towed.
Right. Like that, like no good loser of a son-in-law that I have got my fucking car towed.
Right. Yep.
As he's like bleeding on her white tablecloth. speaking of blood, the other thing I had that I would be absolutely so upset if we didn't mention was that this has quite possibly, because I have thought about this all my life in terms of a murder weapon. This has a scene where John McClane rips an icicle off of a building, off of a roof or some part of a building and stabs a dude in the eye with it.
It's awesome.
And it's incredible.
Yeah. No, it's really fun. And like, yeah, this, and there's another one where it's like using his environment.
Yep.
Is his superpower. Like he, you know, he was outmatched. The guy's bigger than him. And he just used what was around him. Also, I love that this movie does something that I like in Sudden Death, where there's like an offsite excursion that has to happen to set up the broader terrorist plot. Like, remember they have to go, that weird dude has to go and like get the chef's wife in Sudden Death.
Yeah, right.
So like in this one, they have to go to this like abandoned church and like kill the dude who runs it.
This poor old man who's there and he's like talking to them about the church being turned into like a daycare and all this kind of stuff. And he's like, I've been here forever. And he's like, I guess there's like a little piece of me that's going to die in this church. And the guy goes, you're right about that, old man. You are going to die here. And he just like blows him away. And it's like, shit. I mean, there's so much needless death in this. It's wonderful.
Oh yeah. This team of terrorists kills everybody. Every chance they get, they are immediately pulling out their weapons and just murdering. It's great.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think that might be it. I think that's all we got on Die Hard 2.
I have one weird question for you. I was going to ask you earlier.
Give me that weird question.
When we were talking about airports, do you ever, like, when you're in an airport, do you ever, because people talk about, like, when they're, like near like a cliff or like at some high building, they sometimes feel the urge to jump off. When you're at an airport, do you ever feel the urge when you've like, you're just standing around waiting, you see the like the area where if you pass it, you can't, you have to go back through security. Do you ever feel the urge of like, what if I go there just to go through security again?
No, I honestly can say that I've never felt that, but I understand where you're coming from.
Because it's like a siren song where I'm just like staring at it. I'm like, I can't go past that. I can't go past that.
That's a no-no.
Yeah.
But I want to. Yes. That's, I mean, I know that feeling that you're talking about where like when I'm at like the upper deck of a baseball game and I'm like, what if I just like leaped off this?
Right.
Or like, or if I'm like in the top row of the upper deck at like an Indians game. And I'm like, if I stood on the top of this chair, like in the last row, and I just like, cause it's all a huge stadium seating. So it's all a deep,
right,
like, you know, decline. How many rows would I make if I just leaped off this chair?
I've thought and about like, that too.
Landed on somebody. Like nobody would be, no one would suspect it. So like literally you could like snap a dude's neck. If you like, I think about that all the time. I really do. And just like thinking about hey, if I grabbed that cop's gun and just started like not shooting anybody, but just like shooting it in the air and stuff, like I started thinking about like the next like phases of what would happen, which would be like I would go to prison. Or yes. You know, and like, or like that next day I'd be like, what did I do?
Like, why did I do that?
Yeah. Like what the fuck is wrong?
If he had a partner, you would definitely be shot and killed.
Well, you and I are white, so I don't know about that. Like
they would be like, sir, like set it down. I think you're mentally ill. Like we can drive you home.
Yeah, or like, why don't we walk you back? Why don't we walk you back into the baseball game and we'll find a good seat for you or something.
Yeah,
you can,
have you ever stood
at Everybody makes top a mistake.
Of, have you ever stood at the very top and just jumped onto the crowd below?
We'll show you how to do it. It's great.
That's a fair point, yes.
But you are correct. You should be shot dead there, which like that would be crazy too. But I always think about that, like where it's like, what if I committed this crime right now?
I do get anxious when I see a police officer gun. Like, I don't think they're going to shoot me. Well, that's part of my white privilege. But like, I just get anxious seeing a gun in public. Freaks me out.
Well, let's imagine imagine when you see when you walk into a coffee shop and you see one of those dudes who's like an open carry fetishist. Yeah,
I need my AR-15 while I get my my Pete's coffee and just fuck off.
Right. The bandolier of ammo and four handguns on a belt.
Yeah.
I know.
Don't worry, guys. If someone tries to steal a scone, I'll kill them.
I'll fucking blow their heads off.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, I mean, yeah. When in reality, what would happen is they'd blow their feet off or something.
Oh, yeah. They would trip and fumble and shoot themselves in the foot and fall behind the cashier who would then right. tackle them and be an actual hero.
Right. Right. Oh, man. Okay, you have anything else on Die Hard 2?
It's awesome. Please watch. If you've watched the first one and you somehow haven't seen this one, it's amazing. You're going to be like, oh, this is giving me the feels of the first one. It has pretty much everything that I love about the first movie, but with more explosions.
I will say this too. Die Hard 2 is directed by Renny Harlin, who we have also done in the Winter Wonderland Cliffhanger. So yes. Renny Harlin has done Die Hard 2 and Cliffhanger in the early 90s. That dude's got some action chops. So this is now a Renny Harlin podcast. Also, I thought it was really interesting that this movie far surpassed Die Hard at the box office. So Die Hard 2 made $240 million worldwide. And I believe, I don't know what exact, it almost doubled Die Hard in terms of box office, which I think is interesting. And also the reviews for Die Hard 2 are pretty good. It's like on Rotten Tomatoes, so 70. Yeah, it's 70%. And it made a shit ton more money than Die Hard. And yet this movie just sort of gets lost in the ether, man. It's super bizarre. And I don't know why, but Die Hard 2 is so good and it's such a good rewatch. So I would absolutely, and also it should be in your Christmas movie rotation, especially if freaking Die Hard is. Get your ass on Die Hard 2. Start watching this with the kids.
Oh, wait.
During the holidays.
Quick fun fact. Speaking of Christmas movie rotation, do you know, I didn't realize this until last night, Bonnie Bedelia, do you know who she's the aunt of?
Oh, God, no.
The Culkins.
Dude, what?
Yeah. Her brother is Macaulay Culkin, Rory Culkin, Kieran Culkin's father. Her maiden name is Culkin.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yes.
Holy cow. That is a fun fact.
Yeah. And I love her. She's amazing in Parenthood. Yeah. She's a badass.
Oh, nice. I'm loving that fact right now.
Yes.
You get a little treat. You get a little treat after this.
Ooh, I can't wait. I bet it'll be naughty.
That's for everyone else's imagination to find out.
Yep.
All right. That is it for Die Hard 2. Die harder, baby. Be sure to check out this movie and check us out on social. Revenge of 90s Pod. And we will catch you guys later.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Melon Farmer.
Melon Farmer.
Stuart, can we have a few words, please?
You can have two. Fuck and you.